Good evening, everyone. Thank you all so much for joining us here for our second in a series of Issues That Matter Forum. Tonight's topic is the state of education in Arkansas. This series is presented tonight by the Central Arkansas Library System, the League of Women Voters of Pulaski County, and KUAR FM 89.1, UA Little Rock Public Radio. I'm Daniel Breen. I'm with KUAR News. I'll be guiding the discussion this evening. This forum is being taped for broadcast. It'll be airing Friday, August the 30th from 7 to 8 p.m. and again on Sunday, September the 1st from 9 to 10 p.m. You can always listen live online at KUAR.org. And before I introduce our panelists this evening, I want to thank the Central Arkansas Library System for lending us the beautiful facility here tonight, as well as the League of Women Voters for partnering up with us for this event. I also want to give a brief explanation of the format of the forum. It's going to be split up into two parts. The first is going to be questions curated by us, with the second question reserved for questions we got on social media before the event, as well as questions you all wrote down on your handy little index cards tonight. And the panelists here received the questions that we curated beforehand, and they have not seen the audience questions until just now. So unlike the mayoral forums, I don't know if y'all remember, about a year ago we hosted, all of our participants received our topics beforehand so they could prepare whatever they want, ideas, statistics, whatever they want to bring to this fine table right here. And so we are going to have about 10 minutes per question, and then we're going to move on to the next question. Each person will get about 2 minutes, but they'll also have time to sort of go back and forth. It's going to be great. So now please help me welcome our participants to this Issues Forum. We're going to start with the person closest to me. We have Dr. Michael Mills. He is the department chair and education professor at the University of Central Arkansas. Right next to him, we have Mrs. Stacy McAdoo, our 2019 Arkansas Teacher of the Year. Let's give her up. And she is an AVID and communications teacher at Little Rock Central High School. Right next to her, we have Dr. John Bacon. He is the Chief Executive Officer of ESTEM Public Charter Schools. Right next to him is Dr. Ginny Blankenship. She is Education Policy Director at Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. And then last but certainly not least, we have Ricardo Gomez. He is a Little Rock Central High School senior and AVID student. Thank you all so much as well. Let's begin with our first set of questions, which is curated by CALS, League of Women Voters, KUAR. We've randomly selected who will go first at the beginning of each question, and it is this order that you see right now. So our first question, going to Dr. Mills, what are some ways teachers and administrators can ensure equity in discipline and instruction?
Well, I was talking to my wife earlier today, and I said, you know, I didn't really want to prepare too much for this, so I kind of glanced at the questions, and I really wanted to speak from the heart, because my job is to prepare teachers who can take care of the students in our communities, right? My son is a Little Rock School District student, and that's one piece of why I do what I do, but it's really the fact that I know that my son is going to go through life with a lot of privilege and a lot of opportunities that other children do not necessarily get at birth. And it's my goal and my objective to make sure that the teachers who leave my department are going to be the ones who provide opportunities for all children. Now, to answer the question, I did think about this a lot. I've been thinking about this, you know, for many years. And anybody knows me, well, most people just know me as a nerd, and I love technology and all that. But I truly believe that mobile technology gives students an opportunity to go beyond where they are. A lot of students are stuck geographically. They're stuck in mindsets. And I think mobile technology gives them the ability to go beyond where they physically and sometimes mentally are. But also, I think, in addition to the mobile technology, it's a reckoning. I think administrators, particularly, and teachers have to go through a reckoning in the sense of owning what we have. Every single one of us, with the exception of that young gentleman over there, are here and own some sort of privilege. And we are obligated to use that privilege to help others, right? Our obligation is to help him be the future, because he is our future. And so I think it's important for us to really be mindful of what we have and what we need to do to further equitable opportunities for everyone.
Thank you, Dr. Mills. Stacy McAdoo.
Okay, so just for clarity, the question is,
what are some ways teachers and administrators can ensure equity in both discipline and instruction?
I think one of the most important ways to ensure equity is to make sure that the rules and the rules that are in place are culturally relevant, which means that teachers need to be culturally responsive, which means they need to know the children that they're teaching and about the communities and culture of which they come. If we have rules that systemically target a particular group of students, say for instance, dress codes, where one particular group is the group that typically dresses that way, then you are disproportionately and not being equitable in the establishment of the rules that are in place, if that makes any sense. I also think that as a teacher in the classroom, the way we view our students and interpret the world around us also plays a major role in that as well. We may see one particular student's behavior as admirable, or because this particular child speaks louder or needs to move, then that child is punished or written up because they don't fit whatever the classroom norms that are set by the teacher, which aren't necessarily cultural norms for that particular student. That's pretty much my answer.
Thank you, Mrs. McAdoo. Dr. Bacon.
I think the most basic thing that we have to do is remember why we work in schools, and that is on behalf of the students. And that is remembering that every student that walks into the school, regardless of any other factors in their lives, has to know that school is a place where they're respected, they're valued, they are seen as humans. You know, we're at a point in our society where humanity is almost a questionable thing, if that makes any sense. It feels like we've devolved to a place where we don't respect people as humans. And so for me as an administrator, and even thinking back over the years as a teacher, I mean, the first step to making sure that we're going to provide equity and fairness in the environment is to respect all children, to respect all children who walk in our schools, and start from there as your basis point. You know, there are a lot of things, and Stacy hit on those things that, you know, we put for really adult control, we put so many rules, so many restrictions, so many procedures, so many operational things in place in the school. But sometimes I think we forget that what we're doing is sometimes those are things that are going to be in the best interest of kids, and a lot of times they're things that are in the best interest of the adults. And we forget that when you make a decision about a policy or even just a simple procedure, remember that you're dealing with a child. They're all children. They are the reason we're there. And I just think if we can do one thing as educators is to get back to that point where we all start from that basis. And then all the decisions about rules, procedures, the way we go about educating can flow from that. But I just feel like we're at a place where we have to start with that most basic human characteristic.
Thank you, Dr. Bacon. Dr. Jenny Blankenship.
I love everything that has been said. You took all my talking points. So dignity and humanity for all kids, no matter their background and no matter what kind of school they happen to attend. And there are some specific policy things that you can do to make sure you have equity of instruction. We need to make sure that we have the highest trained, experienced teachers where kids typically don't end up getting them. Making sure they have exposure to different educational opportunities in the same way that white and upper income students are typically tracked to receive. That can mean everything from access to quality after school programs or field trips and enrichment activities, college campus tours, things like that, that you can look within schools and see that there are real disparities in which kind of kids get exposed to which kinds of experiences. And on the discipline piece, I'm with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. We actually did a report on school discipline that works. You can pick up a copy out on the table if you are so inclined. And it lays out some of the disparities by race that are really startling throughout Arkansas, but also offers some solutions that research now shows that work a lot better and getting to the root problems that kids face at home and in their communities. How can we use conscious discipline, restorative justice, things as simple as mindfulness meditation to help kids learn to self-regulate and deal with some of the toxic stress in their lives. But it all comes back to what you said, is keeping the humanity of children at the heart of everything we do.
Thank you, Dr. Blankenship. Mr. Gomez, what are some of the ways teachers and administrators can ensure equity in discipline and instruction?
I would say the main way would be to have a sense of sympathy for the basis of everything that goes on in the classroom setting. Not all of us come from a privileged background, not just economically, but culturally as well. Having sympathy in the classroom setting, especially in public education, is something that is very, very needed. I walk the hallways of my school, and every day there's some sense of injustice and unfair treatment to students, not only students, also staff that work for people. So I would say just having sympathy, being such an understanding person. I understand that you have less than 36 weeks with a student every year. And as a teacher, you can't get to know every one of your students. But it is important to have a connection with every student. So I wouldn't say that it starts with anything such as, you know, rules or norms or standards, just with the simple fact of having sympathy for others and being understanding to others.
Thank you, Mr. Gomez. And just a reminder, this is an Issues That Matter forum on the state of education in Arkansas, sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Pulaski County, KUAR FM 89.1, and the Central Arkansas Library System. I'm Daniel Breen. So we're going to move on to our next question. What are practical ways to affect change or higher level decisions as a community member or a parent? And we're going to start with you, Mrs. McAdoo.
I really don't know. I would like to say that community members and parents' voices really matter. But I know that in my experience as a parent and as someone in the community, I didn't necessarily always feel that my voice did. The politically correct answer would probably be to join the PTSA, to attend forums, and that type of stuff. But I honestly don't know.
So sorry. Dr. Maple.
Yeah, I think what Stacy's saying without saying it is, I mean, we in Little Rock are in a situation where parents and community members don't have the voice that they should have. So as I sit here thinking about the League of Women Voters sponsoring this, I think my first thing is vote, vote, vote. Vote your conscience, vote for what you believe are the people who are gonna put policies in place that are going to create the society that you want. And I think that's the obvious first thing we can do. But I do think, you know, as a charter school person, and I worked in the Little Rock School District for years before that, you know, sometimes we're not open to hearing from parents or the community because we think we're the educators and we know what we're talking about and just listen to us. We're experienced or wise or no. And I think that is, I've made that mistake many times myself, and I think it's a bad mistake because we don't. We may have been trained in some of the practical skills of teaching and learning, but we don't have the finger on the pulse of the community and of our children's lives the way that their parents do and the way that their extended families and their communities do. And so I think it's a great question. I'm kind of like Stacy. I'm not sure what if I were to give any specific steps other than to say that you have to be an advocate and we have to advocate as educators to be better listeners. We have to be willing to listen. Sometimes it's hard, sometimes it's things that we definitely don't want to hear, but we have to be willing to listen, and I don't think we do that well enough at all.
Dr. Blankenship.
I share your pessimism on an hourly basis, but I'm going to try to offer you two very practical but difficult things that we really need people to start engaging in more. State Board of Education meetings and legislative meetings of the House and Senate Education Committees. You often hear them referred to as the Adequacy Committee. And generally the only people that are engaged in that are lobbyists for grown-ups. And then there's me, and I try my best to lobby for children and for families, I cannot do that alone, and I know that it is very hard to get people to show up for meetings that are held during most people's working hours, like the State Board of Education meetings are, and the Legislative Committee meetings are. What can you do about that? You divide and conquer. You find a tribe of like-minded people who care about the issues that are important to you, and you trade off. You find a way to watch bits and pieces of meetings online. You can go and skim through the agendas and the resources they post on their website. But we've got to find a way to make it easier for people to get engaged, because the legislative education committees basically determine what's going to happen with everything legislatively in our state on education. Okay, we're talking about half of our state budget. And then the State Board of Education determines how a lot of that's going to be implemented. And when no one's there and they don't hear from people on a regular basis, they're going to do what they're going to do. So I'm trying to stop. I'm getting the sign to stop. But break things down in really small, manageable pieces so they can take immediate action. You don't have to know everything about everything. Nobody does. I don't. But you can text your legislator and say, hey, we really need more school counselors. You know, hey, we really need more librarians in our school, and they need to hear from you. And I do believe that a lot of state board members and legislators really are listening.
Thank you, Dr. Blankenship. Mr. Gomez, what are some practical ways to affect change or higher level decisions as a community member or parent, or in your case, a student?
In my opinion, first off, I'd like to say I agree with Dr. Blankenship's last comment. Of needing more counselors in our schools. Not just, for example, in my school, I go to Little Rock Central High. As you all know, it's a very big school, a lot of students. Our counselors, normally when you see them, you only see them to talk about schedules, talk about what classes you're taking, or talk about just academic stuff. You don't really get the chance to go in with your counselor and talk about, you know, your life at your house, or just your personal life or problems that you have. The issue doesn't just come from an academic standpoint. In my opinion, it comes from the household. It comes from the personal life that the student lives. I didn't have the best childhood that you could think of. And of course, there are many other young people who have worse stories in mind that are sadder. And sometimes kids, although a kid may be strong and hard-headed like me, or very nice, a student always needs, or just a child in general needs support from grown-ups. So I would say practical ways would just be support children, support staff, because I mean, we have 6 or 7 counselors in our school. They can't handle 2,000 kids at a time. They need help and support.
Thank you, Mr. Gomez. Dr. Lewis.
If you're wanting to get your voice out, I guess you could email Max Branley at the Arkansas Times. That'll definitely get, you know, a message out, but it may not necessarily be the message that you're wanting if you're looking for change. He definitely speaks to the heart of a lot of the issues that we deal with in Arkansas and in Little Rock. But I remember I got to meet with several legislators this past year, and I was kind of apprehensive about it because I'm not really a fan of many legislators, especially ones who don't agree with me, right? So I went in with an open heart because my dean asked me to, and I talked with them, and I was fascinated by how many of them would say, I didn't realize that. Oh, I wasn't sure about that. You know, do you have research? Oh, yes, I do. Would you let me airdrop it to you right now? I can do that. I think many of them are, not all of them, still don't agree with a lot of them, but there are some who do not agree with me politically, but they seemed interested. They seemed interested in being educated. They seemed interested in being given facts, not talking points, not yelling, not rabble-rousing. And I don't mean to say that in a bad way. It's just, you know, we all want to rabble-rouse. We all got Facebook, and, you know, we get really upset, myself included. But I think when we really want to see change, we need to find that specific issue. Like, for example, school counselors. A legislator will open an email that says school counselors needed more than, you know, I disagree with you, or kill the Waltons, or something like that. Something, you know, like, you know, obviously vitriolic and intended for emotional response. But also, they get a lot of emails. So if you can, find some community members who can, you know, watch each other's back and get up to the state capitol, put a letter under their door, go give it to them, stand outside their door and wait for them. So,
thank you, Dr. Mills. So we're going to move on to our third question. How can we better teach the whole child and take into account traumas and home situations when teaching and disciplining students? And we'll start with Dr. John Bacon.
You know, I was reading that and thinking back to when I was a new teacher 20-something years ago, and almost looking at teaching at that time as this robotic act of, I've got to get this right, you know, and we have so many young teachers who, my guess is, are really invested in getting the act of teaching right. And we have some older teachers who are doing the same thing they did 20 years ago. And so, but so much of a focus on the act of teaching as opposed to the art of teaching and the fact that you're actually teaching children. And so when I read that question, and the first thing that went to my head was, you know, we have to be able to put ourselves into the place as much as we can of the children and their experiences. And I thought, what has it been, 2 weeks ago? The, you know, these huge ICE raids in Mississippi. And the children were at school. Many of them were left at school. And whether their families were swept up in the raid or they knew someone who was, or and you think, that's a decision someone has made way over here, thinking that they're dealing with something, but what that impact that has on that child and their family's life, and what the school need, you know, how, if you're a teacher, an administrator in that school, you have to reflect on, this is a different approach. You can't do what you had planned to do the day before, because their lives have now been turned upside down. And that's one example just recently, but it happens in every community in this town, well, you know, whether it's a, you know, this opioid addiction that's causing deaths, whether it's shootings in communities. There is so much bad going on that children experience, and they're going to bring those experiences to the school. And so what I try to do is say, I was naive as a young teacher thinking that it was all about teaching, but what I learned quickly, and I hope that we can impart into anyone who walks into our schools in any role, is that if you aren't paying attention to the news and paying attention by asking your children about what's going on in their lives and listening and reading the things that they write, if you are performing teaching as a robot, you're not going to accomplish any of this. You have to pay attention, because there's so much going on that we have to account for. Sorry, I'm not good at reading. I see the stop sign.
Thank you. Dr. Blankenship.
Oh. This is actually one of the areas I'm more optimistic about, because there's so much exciting brain research that has been coming out over the past few years, and we have a lot of different organizations in Arkansas that are working across issue areas on adverse childhood experiences, different kinds of trauma that occurs in a child's life from birth all the way on. So a lot of good stuff is finally happening, and I think we have to start thinking of education a lot earlier in a child's life. Quality early childhood education has been proven to have all kinds of benefits for kids that last throughout their education. And that's something that we've worked with a lot of partners on for a number of years. One good thing, you mentioned discipline, that came out of this last legislative session that I think was kind of somewhat of a trauma-informed way to go was a partial ban on corporal punishment. They have now prohibited public schools from spanking students with certain special needs if they're non-ambulatory, non-verbal, autistic. And I'm hopeful that as policymakers learn more about the research on what harmful discipline practices do to kids, we'll expand that to all kinds of other kids and do things that we know now work better. You know better, you do better. So I'm hopeful about that. And I think that community schools are also a really great way to bring wraparound services in a real deep and meaningful way to serve kids and their families. And we haven't seen a lot of that in Arkansas, but there's been awesome success stories in other urban areas and other states. So I'm hopeful we can start maybe experimenting with that a little bit here.
Thank you so much. Mr. Gomez.
Just as a refresher, could you repeat the question one more time?
How can we better teach the whole child and take into account traumas in home situations when both teaching and disciplining students?
Okay, so for me, this is a question I really do like. If I could, I would like to have a whole discussion about this question. If you ask people who know me, you know that I'm a very independent person. Due to the circumstances that I had to live when I was younger, didn't have much money. Parents used to always have to go to work just to put food on the table for me and my brother. So ever since an early age, me and my brother, we basically raised each other to be independent. I thank God for that, because that helped me a lot through life. But at the same time, you gotta understand that not everybody is like me. I'm not saying, everybody should be like me. No, be better. But as a young person growing up, you need that support system. You need assets that will help you. Everybody goes through something different, and I mean, I could sit here and tell you groups for counseling or kind of just mediocre stuff. I could sit here and tell you that all day, but that's not something I agree with. I would say that it just starts with a relationship with the child to grow, support them, help them, because I mean, life is hard. Like, for example, the ICE raids, that is not something acceptable, regardless of whatever anybody has to say. And those kids, who knows, their parents probably are guilty of doing something wrong to this country. Those kids are not. They didn't do anything to this country, and that is not acceptable. That's something that shouldn't happen. And things worse than that happen. So I really honestly don't know how to answer the question fully. But it all starts in the household. It all starts with not just the parents. It just starts with supporting every child.
Thank you, Mr. Gomez. Dr. Michael Moses.
Teaching the whole child, we don't do that. Our educational policy is not designed to do that. every educational decision, every educational policy is based on assessment and evaluation of how kids think or do whatever, right? And right now, we use standardized tests like the ACT Aspire. We're the only state now. Alabama's decided they don't want to use it anymore, so we use it, right? For me, I try to think of how does the ACT Aspire actually even measure what a child can do, right? When I think of Steve Jobs, I don't think about his ACT score. I think about him being an innovative designer. When I think of Maya Angelou, I don't think about her SAT score. I think about her beautiful poetry, right? When I see a young man down there, I don't care what score he gets on whatever, right? I want to see a powerful documentary where he had to collect, curate, synthesize, analyze, and troubleshoot, you know, do all kinds of things to create a work of art, a work of science, whatever, right? There are some states that are working toward portfolio-based assessments where you could actually look at a child's culture, background, look at the whole child and say, how can we best give this student an opportunity to demonstrate his or her best self? And I'm gonna tell you one thing, you know, look, I've taught classroom assessment for a long time, and I'm surprised UCA hasn't fired me because I keep saying, you know, standardized tests are stupid. They do not measure what we should be looking at for our students. What we should be looking at for our students is, are how do they collaborate? How do they communicate? How do they advocate? How do they create? How do they curate? How do they provide for others, right?
Thank you. And Mrs. Stacy McAdoo.
And actually, what I was going to say is a lot of what you just said. I don't do a whole lot of things right, but I do relationships right. I think that at the heart of teaching, it's all about relationships. Once you get to know a student, you are able to teach that student as a whole child. And a very specific way that you can teach the whole child is to teach through the arts. You talked about assessment. Since day one, the way I have always ran my class is with the philosophy that all students can learn, deserve to learn, and want to learn. And the way in which I drive instruction is through enriched assessment. I don't think that you necessarily have to have a paper and pencil test to assess, but you can assess through the arts, which many of which you already stated. So rather than regurgitating what you said, teach through the arts, build relationships, and that's it.
I knew I liked you.
Thank you, Mrs. McAdoo. And just a reminder, we're speaking in the second of a series of Issues That Matters forums. It's the second in a series presented by the Central Arkansas Library System, League of Women Voters of Pulaski County, KYR 89.1 UALR Public Radio. This forum is being taped for broadcast. It is going to air on Friday, August the 30th from 7 to 8 p.m. and again on Sunday, September the 1st from 9 to 10 p.m. You can always listen to it on KUAR.org, and I am Daniel Breen with KUAR News. We're gonna move on to our audience questions here in just a moment. I just have one last question that we have curated beforehand, and we are going to start with Dr. Ginny Blankenship first. How do you create a supportive school family environment with yearly teacher turnover? And that refers to students having a new teacher every year.
Oh, that's easy. Treat teachers well. That shouldn't be hard to do, but apparently it is. We've really broken the spirit of our teachers in this country. I don't think it's unique to Arkansas. A lot of it was driven by the standardized testing policies that you've mentioned. It started with No Child Left Behind and it has continued over the past decade or so. I think, you know, what are some practical things that parents can do? Help other schools build, you know, parent-teacher associations where in places that don't have them. You know, I look at some of the disparities at parent involvement and engagement across our district and think, wow, what if we can do this here at this school, what could we help do to create more of a family environment and more community in other schools within our own district? So those are the two things that come to mind.
Thank you. Mr. Gomez.
Sorry, could you repeat the question just
for me? How do you create a supportive school family with having a new teacher every year, essentially?
Okay. I, as a student, can tell you that, you know, it is rare to be close with many teachers that you have throughout your life, of course, because you only get about 36 weeks with a teacher. But it's not about just being close. As I've said earlier, it's just about having the basis of a good relationship. To agree with Ms. McAdoo, it all starts with just having good relationships. It does not start with labeling a student. I can tell you personally, I hate labels. And the grading system that we use, the standardized testing system that we use, I hate it. Not just because I feel like it's a waste of time, but because, to me, you can't base a student's abilities off of a test that tests every subject area that a student has to take by law. Not every student is good in math. Not every student is good in English, and so on and so forth. So the use of labels should be something that should be banished, to be honest, because standardized tests, as I heard earlier, I've worked before, I've had two jobs before. Never once have they asked me, what did you make on your ACT? What did you make on ACT Aspire? It's not something that I've used in life or need in life. And of course, grades matter, but you can't base off a student being good and having an A in every class and saying he'll go out in life. To make this fast, I once was doing this homework assignment, actually, and it was a report about the grading system. It was just dissecting the report. And so I read that Einstein was considered a C student, and look how so many people look up to him. It is proven that most of the time, 4.0 students and above go out in life and have a career that's just for them, while students who are considered C or B or whatever go out and help people. And in my opinion, the best success is the success that helps others, not just one person.
Thank you, Mr. Gomez. Dr. Mills.
Well, my job is to prepare teachers, right? My job is also to help people identify that teaching is not the thing for them. That, you know, you have to, I've had two students in the past year that I'm like, you know, you gotta love kids and you have to have a servant's heart. You have to, right? Because this is not for glory, it is for service. It is a walk of faith for many of us, right? We've talked about, you know, paying teachers well. You know, that's an old trope and everything. Of course, teachers should be paid well. But, you know, one thing that would help is my wife is very active in the union, and she has to manage this back and forth every legislative session of are we going to get this taken away? Are we going to get that taken away? You know, and it's like, I can't focus on my job. I can't focus on teaching Mr. Gomez down there because I have to worry about if I'm going to have health insurance, right? Teachers shouldn't have to worry about that. I guarantee you, engineers don't have to worry about that, right? So teachers shouldn't have to advocate and legislate and do all those things in addition, but they do, right? Because ultimately, it's for the kids, right? But also, I would say, we hear teacher administrators. I can walk in any building, I can tell you what the school's test scores, right? But I can tell you how they are performing or whatever. If I see principals out, if I see assistant principals out, if I see anybody, I can go in and I can tell the school climate instantly if I know that those administrators are actively engaged and supportive. Principals need to step up. Principals need to step up.
Thank you, Dr. Mills. Mrs. McAdoo.
I think it's very simple. If we are student-oriented, student-focused, it doesn't matter who the administrators are, who the teachers are. It's about the students. My classroom, the students have a lot of say in my class. They help set the rules. They help guide my teaching because I recognize that I am not the expert of all things or even an expert of most things. They are experts in a lot of things, so they teach me a lot. And if we approach education from the standpoint that the two most important entities in education are the students and the teachers, everything would, no, we wouldn't have all of these problems. That's all you need. You don't need, you mentioned administrators and you were talking about lobbyists. The only thing that we need for education to occur are students and teachers. We don't even have to have a physical building. We just need students and teachers. So if you treat teachers like professionals, listen to the students, everything is solved.
Thank you, Mrs. McAdoo and Dr. John Bacon. How do you create a supportive school family environment with yearly teacher turnip?
So when I read that, I kept thinking, I bet every school I've ever worked in or walked into, someone talks about how this is a family. And then if you really take a step back, maybe we are, but oftentimes as adults, we show our children what a dysfunctional family looks like. Right. And maybe they already have that experience and they don't need us to demonstrate for them dysfunction. And so, you know, I think it's important, but I think we have to actually mean it. And I think, you know, what Stacy said is, I mean, really, it's relationships, it's teachers and students, it is basic relationships. And so, you know, we can keep saying we're a family, but we better start acting like a family. And that, I mean, that has to show respect for everyone. It starts at the top with administrators showing respect for teachers, for parents, for students, for everyone that walks in that building. Teachers can't be fighting with each other. We can't be, as administrators, disrespecting our teachers. I just think there's so much, it's so deep to think about when we talk about creating a family environment, and I know we all talk about it, but we have to do better. When I was thinking about that, it took me back to my first year teaching, and I was teaching at Pulaski Heights Junior High at the time, and as I told you, I thought I was really more interested in learning how to be a teacher. I don't think I was confident that I had the skills, but I had a teacher across the hall, Marsha Coleman, who has passed away, but was just an institution at Pulaski Heights, she and her husband, George, and she would always walk by, and she would say, "You gotta love them," and I would say, "Okay, you're experienced, okay, you gotta love them." She would say it, you know, a week, 2 weeks, and finally I went and I said, "What? Tell me what you mean. I think I know what you mean, but what do you mean?" And she said, "Do you love eighth graders?" And I said, you know, because the answer is yes, right? I said, yes. And she said, "No, do you love eighth graders?" And I said, you know, I think I do. And she said, "Well, you better, because there are days you're not going to like them. So you have to love them." And I kept and it was just one of those things where a person who, you know, she was quietly guiding me with, "You got to love them." But I know what she meant. And I mean, it just goes back to that basic human dignity that I started with, and as Stacy said, relationships and respect.
Thank you, Dr. Bacon. We're going to move on to our first question from our audience tonight. This one comes from Pat Landis. As a newcomer to the area, I'm interested if there are any metrics or standards that have to be met before there can be local control of the Little Rock School District again. And I believe, Dr. Michael Mills, you mentioned the ACT Aspire test. I think that is the metric. So I kind of want to fold this into another question. How do we ensure educational adequacy while not relying entirely on standardized testing? We're going to start with you, Mr. Gomez.
Okay. Sorry.
Can we sort of quantify that students are doing well without standardized tests?
Simply by teaching is the way that I would say. The most basic form of teaching, just having a relationship with your student, having a relationship where the teacher teaches the student. Tests are important. They are. Tests help you learn, especially if you fail the test. I mean, that's not something good, but it'll help you learn. It'll help you get better. Standardized testing, though, doesn't test what your teacher is actually portraying to you, because whoever it is that makes these tests, they don't know what actually goes on in the classroom setting of every teacher. I can tell you that most of the time when we take standardized testing in my classrooms, it's like a And it's just something that students don't want to do. And a lot of times these students, they don't know what the material on the standardized testing is. They're lost. They don't know what to do. So a lot of them, because it's not a grade, they just guess. They guess on it to just to get it over with. And so my simple answer is I just don't think that standardized testing should be used at all. It should simply be a matter between just the student and the teacher. Let the teacher do her job. Let her conduct her classroom. And I promise you, you will get the best student without having to use standardized testing.
Thank you, Mr. Gomez. Dr. Mills.
You know, first started teaching years ago. Brinkley was my first school over in the Delta. And I found out the kids there did not really care about Grendel or Hamlet, and that was quick. And because what I did learn was when I gave them problems to solve, they perked up. They got engaged. They got active. And you learn a lot about a person when you see them solving a problem, collaborating, finding resources on their own, before the internet, mind you, right? You really get to see the mettle of a child and what they need, what they can do, how they can support each other. And it's sad that when we talk about the standardized test, why there's not more problem-based projects, right? You know, I mean, everyone likes to do a project. I doubt many of y'all look back to your time in school and say, man, that was one great essay I wrote in 11th grade. Boy, I still got that on the wall, right? But you remember all the projects you did. You remember all the exciting things that you worked on. But I will say this. I'm going to move over to the adequacy piece. I think about the word adequacy a lot. And I got to tell you, my son is going to be fine, right? The state of Arkansas says we need to provide an adequate education. Well, that adequate education is meant for my son because he's just going to be fine with an adequate education because he's going to get the rest from me, you know, poor kid, right? But most of our kids come from different cultures than my son does. They come from different circumstances, and they need more than adequate. They deserve more than adequate. And I think when we focus on this whole idea of, well, how do we meet that adequacy standard, we get away from the what do students need to excel and to innovate and to go beyond. Because really, they're the ones who are going to be calling the shots in the future, and we need to support them more than we are right now.
Mrs. Matthew.
You say everything. So in addition to what you just said, when I think about my own biological children, the things that I cared about was, can they think? Are they able to figure out how to solve whatever problem is in front of them? Do they know how to identify and locate the resources that they need in order to accomplish whatever task? Are they happy? Are they thriving? What is it that they say that they need? And again, it goes back to me talking about asking children what it is that they need, because most often they know what they need. Even little children, a lot of times we think that because they are not an adult, that they don't necessarily know what's best for them, but many of them do. And even the small ones, although they may not be able to say, yes, I need to know this equation, like they may not have the academic language to tell you specifically what they need, but they have the language to tell you what they need. And as long as we take care of them here, everything else happens. In terms of standardized testing and other measures, I think those things are important, but they are important when you are looking at, again, I'm a mother of two who are currently in college. So standardized testing, ACT, was important for that because I needed them to get scholarships. So yes, we were, you're gonna take this ACT, you're gonna take it again until you get the score because I'm not paying for college. That was how ACT came to play in my life, but it wasn't, does this mean that you're smart? Does it mean that you're whatever? No, I didn't care. I just wanted scholarships for college. I don't know that answered your question, though.
Thank you, Mrs. McAdoo. Dr. Bacon.
And I think from the audience question recently, maybe in the spring, I think the State Department did actually set some sort of specific measures that they were going to look at to determine returning the school district. But, you know, again, I think it's 3 years into the experiment. And so, but I don't know where those are, but I'm sure if you were to look at the Department of Education or contact them, they could tell you exactly what those metrics were. And I do know that they are related to ESSA scores, which is the letter grade report cards that schools are getting now. But it's interesting when I think about that, and that's really what we're using kind of as an overall measurement. Are you an A, a B, a C, a D, or an F school? You know, a couple years ago, maybe not even that long ago, the federal government, USDOE, kind of opened up how we do letter grades or how states are required to do letter grades so that they could be more flexible than just based on a standardized test. And so we had an opportunity as a state to say, we'll include a standardized test, which I guess is the Aspire for the most part, but we can include other factors. And so, you know, when we look at that, it's really interesting because for like an elementary school, we look at performance or achievement, weighted achievement, we look at growth and we look at other factors. But I think like 96% of the score is all coming out of the spring ACT Aspire assessment. The only other factor that's actually included is student engagement, which is measured by students, you know, student attendance basically. So 96.25% of an elementary school's ESSA score in Arkansas is directly coming from data that's collected on the one ACT Aspire assessment taken in the spring. And as you work your way up to middle school, high school, there are a few more factors, particularly for high school, but it's still the bulk of that letter grade comes from the standardized test. And I think Dr. Mills he listed a few questions ago multiple other ways to look at outcomes. And I think we have to get smarter about how we're determining success. Standardized testing is objective, but there have to be many, many other ways to measure student achievement and student success.
Thank you. And Dr. Blankenship.
I've lost track of the question. In my notes, I took it quite literally as how does the state define, are we providing an adequate education as mandated by our state constitution and as mandated by the state Supreme Court under the Lakeview decision. And most of the time when policymakers talk about adequacy, it's in terms of are we spending the right amount or sometimes how little can we get away with spending on certain things. But there's a whole lot of other things that I think that you can encourage them to consider as they go through the current adequacy process, besides standardized testing and just dollar figures on different things. What is teacher turnover in different school districts? If you've got a really high teacher turnover, you've got a school climate issue, you've got an absentee problem with your kids and your teachers, you've probably got a leadership problem, so that's going to tell you a lot. What are school facilities look like across the Delta when you go down to Dumas compared to when you go up to Rogers, for example? Do teachers have the materials they need just to do their jobs? Do students have school supplies? Why are we still requiring parents to buy school supplies? I mean, that's the bare minimum they need to function in the classroom and do their work, and we have nonprofits and churches scrambling across the state to provide them pencils. That is not an adequate education by any definition of our Constitution. What are the discipline rates? What are the racial disparities? How many students are being funneled to juvenile detention centers for nonviolent offenses on school campuses and then not getting educated there? So I think we have to think of education not just in terms of what happens in traditional school buildings, but what's happening in alternative learning environments, what's happening in juvenile justice centers, and the ways that we're funneling kids out. How well are we serving students with special needs? And I think that's the one that scares me the most, is we know the answer to that, and it is not good.
Thank you very much. And this is an Issues That Matter forum on the state of education in Arkansas. It's presented by Central Arkansas Library System, League of Women Voters of Pulaski County, and KUAR Public Radio FM 89.1. I want to thank you all for coming. We just have time for one last question from the audience, and we are going to start in our original order here with Dr. Michael Mills of UCA. This question comes from Laron McAdoo. If you could throw away, destroy, recreate, and reimagine K through 12 education, how would your school be?
Well, my principal would be Stacy McAdoo. No, seriously. Seriously, it would be a lot more open than what it is right now. I mean, we've made jokes before. Unfortunately, a lot of times we have to relegate it to jokes that we are still in a factory kind of model of education, where we just need to get the kids out just to function in society at a basic level to get them to wherever they go. But we know that, I mean, we know, if we're going to be honest, we know who's going to rise through the top and who are not, because everyone does not start on second base, right? A lot of kids start in the dugout, and we owe it to kids to design a school built on problem-based lessons where the bells, you know, I used to joke with my students before, whenever those bells would go off, I'm like, oh yeah, behaviorism, you know, just, you know, you cause and effect, you know, you jump up when you hear that bell, and that's not how it's supposed to be, right? It's supposed to be more fluid. I always love those conversations I'd have with students after the bell rang, and they continue to ask me questions or debate with me about something after the bell rang, and I thought, that, why are we being constrained to this, right? I'd like to see more trees and life and less concrete. You know, I'd like to have students where they can kind of, you know, actually interact with each other and collaborate. But, you know, unless there's some huge organization with lots of money willing to give me that, I don't know if that's going to happen.
Thank you. Mrs. McAdoo.
I think it would be... I'm thinking of a teacher that actually my husband was under a long time ago at Henderson, and this particular teacher said that he taught to mastery. So although the state, you know, or we had this curriculum that you were supposed to do this at this time and this time, this particular art teacher's philosophy was, we're not moving on until the students have mastered this concept. And that really stuck with me. I think if we have curriculum that is self-guided, if we have curriculum and classrooms that the students have more say in, where they have had the option to choose what classes fit or work for them, then that would be great. I think if we had less limitations on all of these outside voices, and because everybody thinks that they know about education because everyone has attended school. So you have all of these people who think that they know what's best for students and teachers, and they're not in the classroom. So let the students and the teachers have a say. Let them do what they intuitively know needs to be done. Everybody wins. And then, yeah, throw in some trees and some some windows. And we could all just start singing, which we do in my classroom all the time. Even as seniors, they sing. I just think that's what I would want. And I guess the closest thing to that would probably be My son went to a Montessori school before he started school, and it was a lot like that. So maybe if we modeled some of those alternative education places, then we could get closer to what true education should or could look like.
Thank you. Dr. Baker.
So as Stacy just said, my son went to a Montessori school when he was three. And when I started thinking about what this would look like, I think a lot of those characteristics are the things that would make sense, where students are working more individually at their own pace, guiding themselves through lessons. Students have the choice on which subject they're going to work on at a particular point in time, with some guidance to make sure that they're covering everything, but there's no rigidity to, you will do this for this 45-minute period. I think this, whether it's 7 to 3, 8 to 4, 8:45, 3:45, that doesn't have to be the way that the school day looks for every kid. I think we have to listen to students to select what, you know, in addition to what we may all agree are some basic skills and competencies we want everyone to have, students need to be able to tell us what they are interested in, what they would like to explore, and then we have to provide experiences so that the learning isn't as teacher-directed or as, you know, I read a book a long time ago, if it were that easy, we'd just open brain, insert knowledge, close brain. And I think we still sometimes think that that's going to work. And so I think the student voice has to be included in setting what a school looks like, because it is not what we do today. But the experiences, the student choice, and then making it so that what we're hoping to accomplish is not a high test score, but a happy, successful, well-adjusted life.
Thank you very much. Dr. Blankenship, what would your completely reimagined K through 12 experience look like?
I'm just happy that everyone has talked about happiness. For the first time I think I've ever been in any sort of education policy discussion in my career, and I just want kids to feel like they belong somewhere and that when they go to school, someone cares about them and that they're able to have some joy in their day. And yes, we need to get really serious about some literacy issues. There are a lot of things that are positive that are happening right now with literacy instruction, the science of reading, but how do we develop a culture of lifelong learning and getting kids excited about reading, because they have to be able to learn on their own and find their own interest and their own passions and teach themselves things for the rest of their lives. And there's so much noise in the world. How can we help them have joyful experiences at school and then know how to carry that joy and that curiosity on with them for the rest of their lives? And that can look a million different ways.
Thank you very much. Ricardo Gomez.
I definitely agree with all of the points stated. Education is a very, 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 very complex subject. It is not easy to define education. Of course, every single student learns differently. Every year, especially senior year, which I can testify of that, you get these worksheets to help you, these personality worksheets to tell you what type of personality you are. A lot of times these students are either kinesthetic or visual or however you say it, like learning through hearing. And there are so many more other ways. One system of education is not gonna help every single student. Statistics tell you that. To me, I believe it does start with the student and the teacher and their voice. I can tell you right now that most of my senior friends, they don't know what they want to do after high school, and a lot of them will tell you that they want to go to college and they want to do this and that, but they truly don't know what that requires. I am very blessed to be in the Abbott program thanks to Ms. McAdoo and Ms. Smith, who was my ninth grade English teacher, who forced me to be in Abbott, which was ultimately a very, very blessed decision that I took to enter it. And even in Avid, there's a lot of things that I don't know, that I still don't know what I will do after high school. It's not just about teaching math and English and social studies and science. It's about helping these students find out what they will do after high school, because a lot of these students don't know that this life is going to have them in debt with college if they go to college, that all these bills are coming, that a lot of this grown person reality is out there. And that to me, post-education is what should be taught in school, because these students don't know what's coming to them.
That concludes our forum. Thank you all so much to our panelists and our audience for sharing your ideas and coming out tonight. This has been our second discussion in a series of Issues That Matter forum. Please share your comments on this forum and ideas for some future forums by emailing comments@ualrpublicradio.org or through social media accounts of CALS, Central Arkansas Library System, the League of Women Voters of Pulaski County, or KUAR. Our next forum coming up at the CALS Esther Nixon Library in Jacksonville is going to focus on the census, and it's going to be set for November the 14th. So please come out. We hope to see you there. On behalf of the Central Arkansas Library System, League of Women Voters, and KUAR 89.1, thank you for attending. I'm Daniel Breen of KUAR News. Have a great night.